Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. This will be a good one. It's fun. End of 2025. Going to look back. We love our wildlife. There's the outdoor in us all, so to speak. That's from the FWP, Montana's Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. What were some of the key issues that they dealt with last year? Wildlife and recreation, grizzly bear, wolf management. That's been on everybody's mind, not only in 2025, but years prior and years hence as well. So what's the status of the proposal to have them released from the endangered species list and placed under state management? What will state management look like? Some good questions here today. Also talk about plans that have emerged to address a declining mule deer population. And then what measures can we use to reduce the impact of increased usage on Montana's great outdoors? We have Christy Clark, FWP director, today here on Voices of Montana. Hey, thank you guys again. Look, it is the end of 2025. We're going to look back at something that's so near and dear to us, and that is our outdoor and our wildlife and our recreation. I am going to mention, too, a bit later on, that John Forte is going to join us here, too. He's with Riverstone Health, and he is actually a Yellowstone County a public health officer. There's some movement on kratom, and kratom is, well, it's a plant, but it's probably a substance that needs to be regulated, and it's not regulated right now. And there's some policy changes that are coming. You know, this will affect Yellowstone County, but probably the rest of the state as well down the road. So John Forte will join us here in just a bit. So that's a tease for a bit later on. In the meantime, let's welcome FWP Director Christy Clark. Good morning, Christy. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. I'm great. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I look back at 2025. What kind of year was it for you guys and for you, but also for everybody at FWP?
Well, you know, it was a year. It was my first year as a director. I've been here just a little over a year. So for me, it was a lot of learning, a lot of growth opportunities. And it was a busy year. You know, FWP is really... We're really grappling with, you know, the additional use and the additional strain on our resources, our natural resources, as, you know, Montana remains a very popular place to recreate. We see a lot of pressure from non-residents, but we also see, I think, a real uptick in our own residents just really getting out and enjoying all the Montana splendor, you know, whether it's hiking, fishing, any kind of hunting, whatever we like to do. We are very engaged in the outdoors. And so we spent a lot of time talking about that and thinking about what that looks like and how to best meet those needs.
Yeah, those things are on our plate here, too. And I'm dying to talk about each and every one of them. But let's start with that increased pressure. One of the FWP commissioners called it overcrowding. Maybe it feels that way at times. Public land and then, you know, opening up private land, I think it's going to be a big part of that. I'll share a story. I was hunting in eastern Montana, and there were hunters from Michigan that had a hunting tradition in Michigan as well, but it's overregulated there. And they come here and they find that kind of relief that they're looking for, that outdoor experience. But that's just an example of, I think why Montana is seeing an increase in these numbers. What happens on the ground? I mean, we talk about stress on the land and pressures, but I don't know, you know, conceivably what that looks like.
Well, you know, it's interesting because what we're finding is that it's not so much the number of people that has increased. Yeah, we are seeing more people, more non-residents coming into our state for sure. We are, we're called the last best place for a good reason. But the other thing we're seeing that I find so interesting is we're seeing an increase in number of hunter days. So, you know, a party comes from, you know, out of state, say they come in from Utah. And in other states, when you go to their state to hunt, you pick the week that you're going to be there, and you're limited by time. And in Montana, we don't have that regulation. And so what we've seen is an increase in the number of hunter days people are staying on the landscape. And I think that attributes to that feeling of a lot more people. I'm not sure that the tag numbers have come up, but not exponentially. But I think what we're seeing is the increase. We're feeling that increase in hunter days.
And that's probably a real hard thing to address in some ways. How do other states do it? I mean, we want to have everybody have that Montana experience and that outdoor experience. And everybody meaning everybody. But there are some limits to it, though, right? What are other states doing that you might look at?
Well, and that's what we're going to look at. You know, one of the things we're going to look at is the increased pressure in areas like Eastern Montana. Are we doing a disservice to those folks in those areas by not limiting those tags? We did decrease tags, non-resident tags in those areas. The Fish Wildlife Commission did that at their season setting meeting in December. And that, you know, has an impact on the revenue for fish, wildlife, and parks. But you know, at some point, it's not about the revenue, it's about the resource. And when Montanans don't feel like they can have their own experience, they don't feel like they can take their kids out for their first deer hunt because there's too many people and there's not enough deer left on the landscape, then it's time to really sit down, get our pencils out, and figure out what's the next step? How can we address some of these issues?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I'm curious as to what kind of surfaces as proposals for that. You talked about limiting non-resident licenses. You know, all these things are going to have some kind of drawback as well, but this is an issue that we're dealing with. So what is it? Maybe changing the seasons or closing or capping the season in terms of, you know, non-resident hunting days? Or what are some of those logistical solutions out there that are being talked about?
And some of these, you know, will come, it's the Fish and Wildlife Commission is the one that sets the seasons. Yeah. We make the recommendations, but then the legislature weighs in. And one of the bills that passed last session was, it had to do with upland game birds. And only non-residents can hunt the first 10 days of that season for pheasants.
Yes. Yeah.
For the pheasant season, yep. So it gives Montanans a little bit of a lead time before, you know, non-residents are allowed to come in, and I mean, there's all sorts of solutions that we can look at, and that the commission, I'm sure, will be taking up. Like I said, they did there was some movement by the commission in this last season setting to limit the deer tags that are issued, and I mean, and those are all good things. It's just going to be a process, I think, as we get through this next phase and really figure out how to manage the pressure.
Yeah, and input. I know the FWP is really good about taking input on these type of things as well, and so I know you guys will be open to that. Just search FWP and you'll find a place to get some thoughts going there. Christy Clark is with us again, Montana's director of our Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. There's some 750 staffers, management of wildlife, fisheries, state parks. She's got a background in ranching and agricultural leadership as well. And Christy, I appreciate your time here. Let's move on to one. I'm going to get right to this. This happens to be a management issue. It's been on everybody's mind. I got a text message. It came in before, actually, we got on the air because I teased that you were going to be on the program here. And so this comes from Dave up in, along the High Line there, and well-known Dave McEwen. He's a wool grower, and we spoke with him just the other day. Is FWP going to increase the contribution to managing agencies for wolf control? It continues here. The cost of management in particular has grown exponentially, and contributions by FWP have not increased since the program started some 10 years ago. Here's one that I'm really curious about. It's also proven, and I don't know if that's in quotes or not, but that sportsmen do not have the ability to control in areas where wolves are a problem. So you're using hunting as a management tool, and the question I think there is hunting going to be a sufficient management tool? What else is on the plate there? And then we'll talk about Grizzly management. And it's probably kind of the same park here. Does the state management policy for Grizzly Bears have enough latitude to exempt private property owners from any kind of persecution? I think there's a lot of concern about being able to take steps individually on these predators. So let's launch into it. Wolf and bear management.
Sure. So that's a great question, and I appreciate Dave McKeown taking the time to really help us ponder these. We did sit down with wool growers, and we did talk about increasing funding. We're digging through our pocketbooks and shaking some change loose to give some extra resources to wildlife services for wolf management. I mean, understanding that sportsmen play a role, and we continue to set more and more liberal wolf seasons, but we're seeing, you know, a flat line, maybe a slight decrease in wolf numbers. And so clearly it's going to take more tools than just sportsmen. We want to give sportsmen every opportunity to harvest wolves where they can, and certainly they're a big part of that. Puzzle, but it can't always be just that. And so we're certainly not opposed to lethal removal of packs, especially in areas where livestock predation is an issue. So we will be looking at increasing funding to wildlife services. They are the federal partner that we work with. And then there's also, you know, through the Livestock Loss Board, there is compensation for livestock losses and things like that. But those funding sources are okay. Wildlife services, we will look to increase.
Thank you for that. I mean, that's the gist of the question there in wolf management. When are we going to get them off the endangered species list?
Well, that's a great question, and that's one that I've been asking for a long time. Yeah. I think, you know, we need to celebrate the success of the recovered grizzly bear, right? I mean, it's been 50 years on the endangered species list, and it's a success. And so it's time. I know that just talking to the service, Fish Wildlife Service, I know they are working on some plans that'll probably come out the first half of the year. And it'll give us a lot more flexibility in the state and better management tools for us. I don't see them being delisted maybe for another year or two, but I do think that is for sure on the table.
All right, confirmed grizzly bear sighting in the Bangtail Range since recovery efforts have begun. It's the first confirmed sighting there. The grizzly range has expanded with the encounters. We're seeing grizzlies being pushed farther and farther east. Of course, we're calling them the western two-thirds of the state now. This is one of the things that is on the plate for all of our producers. You know, there's of course, hunting interest here, environmental interest. It's one of these issues that have been hard to really find some, I think, collaboration for state management for grizzly bears. And with Christy Clark here, Tom Schultz back alongside from Montana for Montana's Voices of Montana, we picked this one up again. Christy, FWP director. And Christy, you've seen these bears. You've seen them grow. I know our governor has also taken this one up on a personal level too, because, you know, he's lived in the area. He's done some, he's been out and noticed the tremendous increase in grizzly bear population here. It's becoming a problem. And where do we get some resolution on this?
You know, it is a problem, Tom, but it's been a problem. I ranched, you know, up west of Shoto from 1995 to 2015. And I can tell you that my biggest challenge in that, you know, ranching in that area was just the grizzly bears. We cohabitate really well with as many grizzly bears as we have. I mean, it's surprising we don't have more grizzly bear conflicts between humans and bears. I think Montanans especially are aware. They're very bear aware, and they, you know, travel in pairs. They make noise. They carry bear spray. We always have a couple encounters, but, you know, we've been, knock on wood, we've been really fortunate for the amount of bears that we have. Montana, I will say, is poised very well to move into state management. We have a solid state management plan. That management plan, you know, talks about, you know, how do we manage them? It prohibits hunting for 5 years. It has a lot of monitoring in it so that, you know, the concern from, you know, from the folks that don't want to see us move into state management is that, you know, we would go too far and we would jeopardize the species. But this, our plan has a lot of monitoring and it will, we'll keep a close eye on it. But you can't deny that the bears have expanded. And there, some of these areas, you know, around Shoto this spring, there were, you know, a dozen bears around that little town. And that's, it's just too many. It's not good for the species and it's not good for the people.
Well, and here's what's happening as well, is that the grizzly bear has some unnatural behavior now because it doesn't feel threatened out there. And it's the same thing for the wolves. They have, I'm going to call them unnatural behaviors. It's probably a different scientific term. But when a hunter is out and a grizzly bear will hear the gunshot, they come running to the gunshot. They don't run away from the sound of the gunshot. And that's a behavioral issue that is something that you're not going to be able to easily get rid of, so to speak, or address. It's going to take years, I think, in my mind. Is that part of the discussion?
It is part of the discussion, Tom. It has to be part of the discussion. Is, you know, and like I said, this, you know, this over the overabundance or the high density of the bears in some areas is not good for the bears either.
Yep.
Because it puts us in conflict with them, right? And what happens is, you know, somebody perishes, and it's usually the bear, thank goodness, but it's not good. And so if we can get into a place where we can manage the bears, because what we find is that the problem bears are really a small percentage. Most of the time, bears are on the landscape, and they stay away from us, and, you know, we maybe see them on a hillside, and that's great, but nobody wants to have a close encounter. Neither us or the bear. And most of the time, that's how it works. But there are problem bears, and that's where state management can come in and can, you know, work with locals on finding the problem bears and removing them. That is just the bottom line of what we need to do.
Yes. And you know, it's gone beyond scientific numbers, and it's obvious it's a big political battle now, unfortunately. And that muddies up things in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
but the numbers there are solid, aren't they?
They're staggering, to be honest. There's,
yeah.
Like I said, in some of those areas, the really high density, and then, you know, we see them in places where we haven't seen them before, like the Bangtails and, you know, further into eastern Montana. And those are just not habitat suited areas for grizzly bears either. And so they end up getting, you know, they end up getting pushed out further and further, and then they end up, you know, feeding in grain bins and things that are not natural for their habitat either.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the courts have tried to tie grizzly bear recovery, you know, to all these different seven regions. And they've been recovered in the North Continental Divide. They've been recovered in the Yellowstone region. Some of those other areas are not recovered. That complicates this issue, and there's been pushback on that. Can you give me a 1 minute on where that is? Will that be a court issue for grizzly bear management?
You know, I don't think it's going to be such a court issue. I don't think it's going to be a big issue in the courts, because we're finding connectivity with the grizzly bears from the NCDE, the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem, over into the Cabinet Yaks.
Okay.
And so we're finding that they are naturally making their way. Where habitat is suitable, they're naturally getting there. And we don't have to translocate them. They're getting there on their own. And we have proof of that. We have monitored bears moving that direction. And so I think we're just going to see, you know, there's going to be areas where there's not as many bears because there's just not great habitat for them. And that's okay. That doesn't mean that, right. that they need to stay on the endangered species list. It just means that that's maybe not a great spot for them.
Right. I mean, that's a balanced management approach, right? And that's what we need. Christy Clark, again, FWP director with us. Let's move on. Kind of the lightning round here. I got another question, text message to come in, but I want to talk the mule deer populations. They have struggled in some areas. What's being done?
Yep. So we have seen a decline in mule deer populations. I mean, there's no denying that. And it's something that we're pretty keenly focused on. And I'll tell you that the Fish Wildlife Commission has taken measures to reduce the number of tags for deer. The bee tags, the doe tags, they're down. And they also changed the commission. They reduced the number of deer licenses that a resident can hold from 8 down to 3. And so they are taking measures to reduce those. But in 2024, we sold the least amount of tags since 2016, of the bee tags, the doe tags. And so we are cutting those numbers back, and we are seeing an increase in, we're seeing the mule deer number populations come back. They are slowly coming up again, so we're encouraged by that. People sort of have this idea that, you know, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has a larger role in the population. But what we really understand is that the impacts to those populations is more weather dependent and more drought dependent than it really is on hunting pressure. I mean, hunting pressure can move that needle maybe 10%, but it's the environment that really puts the pressure on the species.
Is it a regional problem geographically? Do we have better and worse conditions?
Yeah, I think we're seeing sharper declines in the eastern side of the state, in Region 6 and 7 for sure. But we are seeing an increase in those numbers, though, and that's encouraging.
Okay. What does predation do? What has the grizzly bears, the wolves, the mountain lions, and other predators, what has that done to our populations in general?
Well, I don't think we can deny that they have an impact on the population. I mean, it's just a fact, right? I mean, you know, and as a species, deer are more vulnerable than elk. I mean, they just are. They're just, you know, they're smaller and they're easier to prey on. And so, you know, the predators are going to have a bigger impact on deer population. They just are.
Coyotes, a quick text message here. Last minute, major factor. Does the FWP address the coyote population?
We don't have management of coyotes. I mean, can take coyotes off the landscape anytime. It's not, for us, it just doesn't fall under our management. And so we encourage people to, you know, to control coyotes as best they can. I think there's a coyote competition coming up in Showdale, I think today or tomorrow.
A competition? So it's a competition. Oh, okay. That's what they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a coyote hunt competition with prizes, I guess. So I was just reading the local paper when I was home over Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's good. I know that's another issue as well. We're out of time. I really appreciate your time here. And I know that we'll be chatting in the future because there's generally some news coming from your office. So you're always welcome. Happy New Year to you, Christy.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure. Happy New Year to you.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.